The best way to predict the future is to invent it. Stephen Ambrose brings you up to speed on what the future holds as he explores the latest technology as it impacts our lives.
Well, good morning and welcome to Tech Talk right here on Hi FM. And as always, we look into what's hot, what's new, what's exciting, what's moving the world of technology that's changing pretty much our entire lives as we move ahead. And this show, gave it some real thought. Next week, Thursday is Christmas. The following week, Thursday is New Year. And then that is that for 2025. And on many, many, many levels, this has been one of the most momentous and interesting and truly pivotal years, I think. I know it's a round year, it's 25 years, and a lot of people have been telling me all sorts of stuff about numerology, and you know, there's a lot of metaphysical things that have gone on. We're going to stick with basic physical technology, but some of the things we'll talk about today, some of the look backs and look forwards that we're going to discuss around, obviously, AI, really have shifted the world that we know it. It's shifted the way that we do everything, from searching on the web to going to shops to doing physical stuff. It's affected our work, it's affected our play, it's affected our travel. It's absolutely become infrastructure. And 2025 will definitely be the year that AI became infrastructure. Just as you walk into a home, switch on a light, turn on a tap, have a drink of water, you know, do what you need to do without even thinking about it. It's natural. It's easy. It's just part of the process, getting up in the morning, getting ready for work, coming home in the evening, relaxing on the couch, going out and, you know, enjoying yourself. AI simply became part of the background. And that is when a technology stops being super interesting and new and simply becomes the way that things are. And on many levels, that is complete science fiction. If you think about the movies and the stuff from 10, 15, 20 years ago, with all the crazy stuff that you saw on Star Trek and all that stuff, I know I looked at all of this and thought, wow, how interesting. Well, the AIs, the technologies, the beam me up, Scotty, not quite yet, but I think that's something that we're not going to not see in the nearish future. So much is happening. And it's not just that the generative models didn't get a bit smarter. They simply became more reliable, that entire industries are now building workflows. People are building their workflows, their day-to-day workflows around it. And the agentic systems that emerged during the course of this year, it doesn't just answer questions. So it stopped being a one-way street. You used to go online, look for stuff, and then take action based on what you found, however long that took. Well, now AI has moved from giving you information to actually doing stuff for you. So it's not simply we find and look for something. We can find and look and order and replace and get involved in stuff directly from a prompt on an AI platform. And the other part of that whole change, that whole move around what's going on with AI, is that it finally became fully multimodal. In the beginning, you used to type in like back in the 60s, type in and use a typewriter and correct things with that little white, most people won't even remember that, but I do, the little white tape that you use to block out and fix rather than retyping an entire document. Clever, very manual, but that's how it worked. But AI now, and every interaction you have with AI, has become multimodal. So not only text, voice, images, video, code, documents have just simply become part of the process. Most people I know, well, a ton of people that I know, are simply using AI as their co-pilot. That's Microsoft's word. But yeah, as their buddy, they import, and again, some security issues around this, but they upload documents, they upload pictures, they upload videos, they upload all sorts of information, and then interrogate it like you would with a specialist that you would normally find. So a specialist doctor, specialist plumber, specialist business advisor, stock, whatever. And AI goes in the background and trawls the entire known database of knowledge, web, you name it, documents that sit on the web, books that have been written and placed on the web. Anything that has ever been digitized has become accessible to the AI. So all of these have come one flow and turned something that was like super novel. It's actually, if you sit here and think back, the sheer novelty of it in the beginning was intoxicating. It was fabulous. It just felt so real and so science fiction-y, and you were talking to your computer or you were typing and you were getting these intelligent responses. I won't get into too much of the original, you know, craziness that came out and the stuff that looked right that wasn't, and all sorts of hallucinations that were popped out as real fact. But that was part of the maturity, part of the growth, part of the online evolution of all of this. But now you don't even think about it. You pick up your phone, you say, hey, Siri, or whatever, one of them, even, you know, Gemini, whatever it is. And you say, use this photo, do this, recommend that, fetch that, order me this, book that, do the following stuff, and off it goes and does it. But AI wasn't alone. So all of these things were happening, and what was going on in the back end was way more than revolutionary. Cybersecurity completely and utterly transformed and integrated into some form of AI-aware platform, systems, processes. Data centers completely changed from becoming one-way pipes to your Netflix streaming to multi-conversational, dense data communication between data centers, between platforms, between countries, between regions became massive. The density of data, which used to be, you know, 80% down, 10% up. I need this. Boom, a whole lot of information was sent to you. Now you say, I want to do the following, but based on et cetera, et cetera. And it goes off and suddenly it's talking to 20 databases. It's reading 50 websites. It's interrogating a million data stores wherever they are in the world. And those are working backwards and forwards and refining and changing and doing the most incredible stuff at speeds that are pretty remarkable. I know that for the most part, people used to say if a website didn't respond within a second or less, people would lose interest and move to another website. And now you happily wait 30 to 90 seconds for a full analysis. But going on in the background, and interestingly enough, the time to delivery is dropping all the time. And that's because the platforms are getting more powerful. The data centers are getting more optimized for this sort of differential and inferential data flows, and all that sort of stuff is happening at the back end, and you don't even notice. Oh, it's the new version of Grok, it's the new version of whatever, and they just seems to be a bit faster and a little bit smarter. But that's exactly that. But where are all these data centers? How are they all being powered? We're going to see some interesting stuff coming in the next couple of years around it, and obviously we're going to talk a little bit about this as well. Quantum computing, which was sort of ultra science fiction as little as a year ago, has started hitting its stride. It's growing, typically like all technologies, pretty much exponentially. And it's delivering practical wins in drug discovery, material sciences. And that is stuff that actually you need enormous, enormous complexity. And the variables become almost incredibly diverse. And how do you do that? People simply cannot, in the time available to us on Earth, compute through the sheer quantity of data that the various quantum computers can do. And again, that's going to drive everything. And we'll go a little bit into that as well. The other major trend that, again, is complete science fiction, from the Jetsons all the way through to any science fiction you see today, robotics has become super, super topical and has actually grown some useful arms and legs, literally. So we're seeing a lot of stuff with sustainability. The green agenda seems to have faded. a lot. I always maintained it was a business opportunity with great marketing. And in fact, it was. So now we sit in a place where green is now becoming more useful and more sustainable and more efficient. So we will talk about all the top five technologies straight after this, and we'll try to give you a little bit of insight into what's coming. So we'll be back after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. And in our Tech Talk Cafe segment today, I'm going to do a little wrap-up of what I believe are the five defining technologies of 2025, and just give you a little bit of insight into each one and try to give context to all this crazy technology, because the buzzwords get thrown around, the hype cycles never stop, and it actually becomes super confusing about what's what, what's useful, what's not. But as I said in the intro, we are living in a world where in many ways, technology has become infrastructure and mainstream. And once that happens, just like the fax machine, which came and went, and just like many technologies that have come and gone, they all layer the foundation of what technology will deliver going forward. And the utopian sort of vision of human beings doing only interesting, fantastic, crazy stuff, and we all living in a utopian technology managed world is one vision of life. The other is that sort of the where the machine takes over and subjugates humans and finds them a little less than useful and basically tries to get rid of humanity as we know it is the other vision. I believe that nothing's that simple. There's going to be a very, very definite some path in the middle of all of that craziness. In many ways, the technologies we'll discuss now will introduce a utopian type environment, stuff where human knowledge expands exponentially, the ability to do things changes considerably, efficiencies grow, which will bring greater economic benefit across the world, as usual, not always evenly spread, but certainly the trickle-down effect should bring most of the world to a new and fresh place. We can only hope on that. But the technologies do have a downside. There's always a dark side to everything. And between the two, we are going to find that there are going to be many useful things that are going to completely and utterly reframe our world, change the way things go. And yet, through all of that, nothing will change. People will remain people. People will do what people do at every age. And life will continue pretty much as it goes. Enough of the philosophy and straight into the technology. The number five, there are five things that I think we're going to look at over the next couple of months and going into 26 and beyond. But the five defining technologies of 25 that have essentially rewritten the rule book for technology for all of us. I'm going to start with number five, and that is, I think in sort of relative importance. It's very difficult to sort of give this a ladder, but the fact is one of the key elements is agentic and multimodal AI goes mainstream. So this is the year, 2025, where AI stopped being a clever assistant and started becoming an assistant that actually started acting on your behalf. So as we discussed earlier, as I said, you used to put in information, get information out, then you used to look for more information, and you used to use that information to do certain things. Well, now, for many, many things that you want or need to do online or need to do in your daily life, you can use one of the AI platforms. And those of you who are not using AI as your first go-to on even Google, well, Google's made it so easy because you type in your query and AI, if you allow it, comes up as the first response with all the links and all the other stuff below. And slowly but surely, that will utterly transform into why bother? But right now, sort of the middle road, as I was talking about. So the big thing is that the agentic and multimodal stuff has gone mainstream. So systems like Grok 4 from XAI, Claude 3.7 from Anthropic, OpenAI's GPT, ChatGPT 4.5 Turbo, can now plan multi-step tasks. They can reason through complex problems, just like you would. You plan a search on the internet. You'd reason through all the information and you'd link backwards and forwards. And most importantly, can handle mixed inputs like you can. You can look at a text, you can look at a video, you can watch whatever you need to do, you can take some images, you can take documents and completely, you used to spend hours reading through them, taking that knowledge, doing some online research. So online research for anything, be it as simple as a new washing machine, has utterly and completely changed. And the speed at which you find all this information has completely and utterly changed. What used to be hours surfing the web, hours checking out stuff, going through various catalogs, trying to read reviews, can now be summarized in 30 to 90 seconds, as I said, into a two, and you often said, it says there, checking 165 websites. Really? Again, you have to be extremely careful. I had a long discussion with some really smart research people in the last couple of weeks, and you have to understand what AI is doing and how it works to get the best out of it. So simply saying, only use references that are real. Do not infer. Do not try to find information that is not entirely linkable to a source, and be extremely accurate in your information that you supply to me. It sounds obvious. It sounds like stuff you should do because you do it in your head when you do your own research. But it's actually important that you tell the AI. On that level, over the last year, the AI has gone from a little bit crazy, loose, and mad in that respect to a lot better. All the research that I've seen recently is showing that it's approaching the level of human intelligence in certain narrow places. We are still not dealing with real artificial intelligence yet, but we are dealing in systems that can do stuff that you can do at a level that you would be able to do it. So that, just think of that for a moment. It completely changes everything. And the other thing that started happening within businesses, it's still fairly low. The benefits in some research show as little as a third of businesses are seeing any value. But more and more this year, 50 to 60% of businesses are starting to use and trust agentic AI for everything that they do, from customer journeys to supply chain optimization to all sorts of investigative work that needs to be done. So any process, any system that used to use people doing basic checking, fact-checking, things like that, companies are starting to integrate AI into absolutely every platform of that sort. And this goes for medical, it goes for anything. So the trust has grown and grown really fast. This year, 30%, next year, probably 50 to 60%. And within 2 to 3 years, 100% of businesses. In fact, you will not be able to buy or operate a business process online or on any computer, or how do you do business without some form of computer today, without it being automated through some form of AI with agentic capabilities. In other words, you need 5 quotes, easy to get in a purchasing environment. You'll get them, they'll talk to each other, you'll get the best price, even negotiate discounts, all sorts of things. You create the framework, it'll go off and harass someone else's AI to get you the best deal. So stuff like that sounds crazy, but it's actually true. And the performance gap between open and closed models also narrowed dramatically. Now, the point is, open models are what you see on the web now, the ChatGPTs that you use. Remember, everything you say to it, everything that it reads, everything you upload, every single query you do teaches the AI more and more. All of that stuff is saved in perpetuity, is stored somewhere in the web, and is used mostly anonymously. There are security platforms, there are security things that have been put in place, and some have become really good. There's some, you know, some of the philosophical stuff about do no harm, and basically the four rules of robotics have become more and more relevant. But simply know one thing, that the open models have access to everything you give it. And that is the power, because billions of people around the world are inputting, and all that information is being correlated, managed, and the algorithms are smart enough, the back end is smart enough to sort through it all and to find ways and information paths that you specifically need. The closed models which businesses used, which used to keep them separated. So anything business related, you used an AI, a closed model AI, to go through your business and to go through every single document you've ever produced that's ever been stored, all the data coming off your accounting system, your security system, all of this gets correlated, stored, and used by the AI. But the way that it interacts with the global and separates your private with your public knowledge has narrowed dramatically. And that makes AI much more accessible and much more useful for many, many organizations. Moving on to what I alluded to a little earlier, and that all of this has changed the data and the data environment considerably. So all these massive hyperscaling data centers around the world. There's even discussion with Elon Musk, and there always is with anything to do with him, of data centers in space, because there's two things that data centers need. Cooling, because technology generates massive amounts of heat when the processes run and the drives work and all the stuff, this electricity is moving around at high speed. And it needs space. Just huge amounts of space. So Elon Musk is now talking about data centers in the sky, moving the data centers and the data storage into space, using sunlight as the power, using space as the coolant, and having high-speed communications like Starlink, being able to link back to Earth in a multimodal way and give you the information in the time required. I mean, the delay between response time and getting your information on Starlink is sometimes better than some of the terrestrial systems where the fibers you connect America to the US to Europe to us. So when you send a link up to space, if for example the data center sitting there does the AI stuff up in space, sends it back to you, it might be quicker than using a landline, as they call it. So AI infrastructure is going to explode. And one of the things that it's brought is a nuclear power revival, because there is a massive need for energy. And the answer appears surprisingly was nuclear. Nuclear went through a bit of a nuclear winter after Fukushima and many of these other disasters that have happened around the world. There is no question that this year, nuclear was no longer fringe. It was becoming the pragmatic choice. It's carbon-free. It's baseload power that can run data centers 24/7. What it has also done is bring a bit of breathing room for renewables, while sparking some serious investment in next-generation reactors. So Germany just got rid of all of theirs, and now they're struggling, especially with the whole global Russian energy crisis stuff. But there's no question that small and medium-sized nuclear power reactors are becoming much more popular, and we're going to see quite a growth there, for whatever you may think about it, but certainly less messy, less complicated, and far more efficient than any other type of even solar and wind. And every country is going to need baseload power. So that is another sort of strange thing that has popped out of the whole thing. The third most important thing that I want to discuss here is that embodied robotics has finally become practical. So robotics as a science fiction and as a practical thing has been a big deal. I mean, the simplest robot you have is your little powered vacuum cleaner cruising around the lounge, mopping and cleaning and doing stuff. I mean, that's a robot. Doesn't matter which way you look at it. It's a robot, and it does stuff robotically. It does stuff on command. You program it. It does things when you're not there, et cetera, et cetera. But more importantly, humanoid and polyfunctional robots have finally started doing useful work. BMW have recently just finished a trial of robots doing, humanoid robots doing work on a production line for cars. And it was incredibly successful. In fact, so much so that they have started phase two with a whole new generation of robots to do stuff that people used to do. It was a very single task type view on things. So it wasn't highly complex. And it was the key items that machines in the Industrial Revolution completely changed. Any repetitive task that would take too many people to do 24/7 was replaced by a machine, which operated by humans or working with humans, allowed industry to scale in a way that it could never do before. You couldn't have enough humans. It just didn't work in that way. And robotics now, with the growth and the competence of embodied AI, has turned sort of hypothetical demos into actual shipping products. So there's a lot of talk in America that Amazon is getting rid of people in their packing and storage centers. Robots pick, pack, store, move around at incredible speed. The same thing is happening in China with Alibaba and many others. There are absolutely warehouses where no human being ever goes in other than to, you know, replace a machine that the machine can't fix, if that goes anywhere. But certainly useful robots, still with limited amounts of functionality, are becoming everyday shipping products. So logistics centers, homes are seeing, as I said, your robot vacuum cleaner. And they adapt to a lot of situations rather than simply repeat program motions. The current state of the art is still very mono or multifunctioned within a very carefully scripted and controlled framework. But the truly thinking robot, the truly active, adaptable, useful robot that can do multiple tasks, learn new tasks, and function on a completely clean, simple, easy way, have begun. It has started. It's been demonstrated. Some of the demos are using people to drive them, you know, not entirely fair. But the fact is that, again, looking at some of the stuff that Elon Musk has come up with, some of the stuff that's coming out of China, the humanoid useful robot, and certainly in Japan, always quiet, but you've got to have been there to see the level of automation and the level of robotic stuff. You go to an airport and there's all sorts of useful cleaning, talking, walking, delivery bots floating around doing stuff. I've seen it pretty much in every top airport that I've been to over the little while. So robotics is going to become a huge practical thing. The second thing, and I can see I'm running a little bit of time of this segment, is that quantum computing now really delivers real world wins. In the past year, it was all about getting faster qubits, and there were these massive science fiction-y looking machines that looked like something out of, you know, the future. But they got smaller, they're running at room temperature, but they are delivering quiet, amazing breakthroughs. Faster drug simulations, as I said about quantum computing, the more complex, the more variables, the better it gets. Novel battery chemistries, optimization problems solved in hours instead of years, weather patterns figured out in minutes instead of months. And what has happened in the back end is, one, it's running at room temperature. Two, the error correction and the noise damping has improved exponentially. The platforms have become more accessible via the cloud, and many, many enterprise pilots have multiplied across businesses and everything. So quantum computing is moving from science fiction and theory into practical, useful, and relatively, at this point, accessible compute. And it will ultimately, it may not completely and utterly replace standard computing, but it definitely is becoming something that is going to make fundamental changes going forward. And then the most fundamental thing that happened this year that we are going to see having impacts going forward is that generative AI has matured into essential infrastructure. I've talked a lot about it. I'm not going to have to go into that much. But from hundreds of millions of weekly users, AI agents are handling entire businesses, business processes. Generative AI has become as ordinary as electricity. And that is going to set the tone for everything that we see in technology over the next couple of months and years. And on that note, we've got a quick break, and we'll be back straight after this. And I've got another message from our sponsors as soon as we're done.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. And before we get stuck into my gadget section, where we can do a quick wrap up of some cool gadgets for the year, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage your health risks. Whether you're having a regular wellness check, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. All of this fast, affordable, and done with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside Dis-Chem pharmacies across the nation. Better health starts here. Now, moving into the gadgets that made 2025 in some ways more personal and certainly became part of my go-to pack of things that I work with pretty much every single day. And although I don't use these often because I find I've never liked glasses, but that's another story, our advanced AR glasses have finally become pretty much lightweight and practical for everyday wear. Again, not my personal preference, but a lot of people do. A lot of them, like the Ray-Ban models and some of the more advanced models, one you can't get in South Africa yet, you can import them, but they're expensive, are the X-Real 1 series. But they can have lenses in them, so you can, if you wear glasses anyway, could become something that is pretty useful. But the new one, the latest generation stuff, some of the latest Ray-Bans, the X-Real 1 series, the Rocket AR lights and things like that, offer an incredibly wide field of view, significantly brighter displays. Some of them are in the originally were like green, like old-fashioned computers, but now they can give you useful features like navigation overlays, real-time translation, and private virtual screens for work or entertainment without that sort of real geeky look of the earlier prototype. So look forward to more of these. I don't see this as a huge market in real terms, but augmented reality has firmly embedded itself within business. So more and more service technicians and people that work with equipment are going to have these glasses showing them. They no longer need to carry their books around with, you know, if they're fixing something in your home or in your business, they don't have to carry around a manual. It's all on the AR. And the AR with the AI brings you the ability to diagnose and to fix and to get involved in all sorts of stuff that used to take a long time. So expect efficiency. I doubt the cost of a call out will drop, but there's no question that hopefully they'll be able to fix stuff quicker, easier, and more regularly in the normal world. But AR glasses are definitely becoming something to look at. In South Africa, look at the Ray-Bans, look at a couple of others, and you'll find that there's some from Xiaomi and other people that really are interesting to have a go at. And something that I've played with a lot, I'm not utterly convinced, especially with the launch of the Whoop and all those type of sort of single function. Amazon have got one. There are a couple of others from Amazfit and many others, which are simple bands that don't have a display. They use your phone and the app and the back-end AI platforms to do everything. But rings actually do have a place. And the leader of the pack in many ways is the Oura Ring 4. It's available now through Discovery. It is available in the country, but it is expensive. And it comes with a monthly subscription to a platform that literally leads the pack in terms of precise sleep staging, stress monitoring, and cardiovascular insights. So there are many, many competitors out there. But if you want a ring that really does the business, that is the Oura Ring 4. They come in many models. There's ceramics. There's some really cool looking ones. And it is the least fashion faux pas type product out there. It's a ring on your finger. You can style it with any watch or anything you want. With all the other Whoops and the bands and the watches, you're either walking around with a smartwatch, which some of them are really good looking. Certainly the Apple ones have become accepted everywhere. But if you like fancy or decent analog watches, it becomes a bit of a challenge. And then you can replace it with something on your other arm, which again, looks a little off for the most part. It looks like you're really trying hard. But it is very possible, whereas a ring is just another little thing on your finger and does the trick. The downside of rings are the battery lives are limited by nature. Two, if they break, you replace. So they're not ideal in terms of, you can't change the strap on a ring. But that offer multi-week battery life and some comprehensive tracking. There are, from Samsung, Amazfit, many versions. So have a look at what's going on there. Let your agentic AI find all the relevant information based on your needs and likes. And check out what's available in the health tracking ring world and decide if that's for you. Wonderful. If it's not, go for a smartwatch or a Whoop or some of these bands that really can do pretty amazing things to track your health, track your sleep, track lots of stuff around your health and wellness. And as I was saying earlier, one of the other things that has almost become a thing you see in every single home is a robot vacuum cleaner. But what was innovative in 2025 was a robot cleaner with a mechanical arm. So the Roborock Saros Z20, or Z20 as Americans would call it, turned a gimmick into a pretty useful household assistant. What it has is a built-in arm that can pick up small objects. They're limited to about 300 grams, so socks, tissues, other little toys can be picked up and moved before cleaning rather than avoiding them. Otherwise, you have this machine going around a little sock, vacuuming everything, and then there's the sock with something not vacuumed. Messy, sloppy, but cool. So this thing picks it up, puts it aside, puts it somewhere, and then carries on cleaning that area. So, and that is a full-on. It's got radar, it's got AI, it's got image recognition, it's got little motors. When it gets low in power, it goes back to its docking station, empties its tanks and dirt, and then charges up and off it goes again. Perfect robot for 2025, and something that I think all of us are going to be using 26 onwards, mopping, cleaning, vacuuming. Why bother? The machine does it best, and it never makes a complaint except when it sends you a message. David is stuck. Yeah, my son-in-law is called his David, and it loves getting stuck in weird places. And then you could, I don't know what you do, but you could tell it to go home. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it's truly stuck. So robots are useful until you have to get them out from under the couch. And the last and most important, most entertaining thing that I've used a ton are premium noise-canceling headphones. Now, the little in-ear Apple phones and many others have done a great job of bringing it to everybody. It's actually a bit annoying because people sit wherever they are with these goodies plugged into their ears. They can't hear what's going on, and they can't see what's going on because they're glued to their phone. And they're good. Most of them have really good, the higher-end ones, really good noise cancelling, so they can't even hear you when you moan at them. And they can't hear the background noise of what's going on. But nothing beats some of the top new refined designs of over-ear headphones. And I've just been informed, time is running away, we've got a quick ad break, and then I'll wrap this up with some final thoughts straight after this.
This is Tech Talk with Stephen Ambrose on 101.9 High FM.
Well, welcome back. And as I was saying, one of the most useful, and I do travel quite a bit, useful gadget that I found that has really reached new heights and refined the experience considerably are two models that I've played with and one I own, which is the Sony WH-1000XM6. It's the 1000 series that I've owned from series 3, I think, or 2, you know, a few years, all the way up to the new XM6. And they continue to be my go-to. 30 plus hours battery life, incredible comfort, amazing sound quality, also best in class, pretty much, or as good as anything, even compared to the Bose. Noise cancelling and just useful features that you've got spatial audio and all sorts of stuff, really with good quality build and easy portability. Hard not to recommend the Sony's if you're looking for a top-end or decent quality over-ear, closed and comfortable headphones. The Powers & Wilkins PX8 is also an incredible device. It probably has the edge in terms of pure high fidelity. It's just not as well priced, number one. Number two, it's also a little less comfortable overall, but generally it has an incredibly hi-fi, high-end sound. It's useful. It has incredible noise cancelling that's certainly as good as anything else. And it's luxurious and it's cool. The various other models from B&O, which I find are excellent, but a little overpriced for what they deliver, are also available. As usual, I really recommend, if you're in the market for these, the safe bet is the Sony price versus value, but the Bowers & Wilkins, the B&Os, and the Sennheisers, there are many noise-canceling over-ear travel or even just working in an open office type headphone out there. But listen to a few of them. Many of the retailers will allow you to listen. Some will even allow you to use your own source of music. And again, using high uncompressed music on Tidal or one of the other, you know, even Apple Music, the sort of premium streaming services, does make a huge difference. Spotify have just recently gone with high-ish, not true high-end, but high-ish end HD audio, which is better. But for the money, not entirely sure. But there are many, many out there. So have a look at all of these. And again, built into most of them is some form of AI noise cancelling. There's AI flitting around even a pair of noise cancelling headphones. But those gadgets that I've spoken about speak to health, speak to robot vacuum cleaners, cleaning your home, keeping you sane on a plane, or, working effectively in a noisy environment, are certainly gadgets that I've used that I'd highly recommend and sort of are my standouts for 2025. And the closing thoughts for this session, because the next two are essentially on public holidays, and I truly expect everybody to be, including myself, to be either on the beach or resting by the pool or taking it easy, trying to recoup from an incredibly interesting year on many, many levels, socially, politically, environmentally. It has been a roller coaster of a ride outside of just playing with technology and enjoying your life. But the standout theme of what happened this year wasn't true wow moments. There were very few of those, if any, where I could say, oh my word, that totally changes everything. But it was a maturity. It was a stabilization. It was a realization that all the stuff we've been playing with over the years was coalescing into a much more coherent technology future, one underpinned by data. More than anything, data is driving pretty much everything globally. It's driving how we eat, how we sleep, how we think, how we work, how we play, and how we get spoken to by many of the people we deal with. They're better informed, they're more in tune with what's going on with us, with themselves, with the environment we're operating in, and it's bringing a level of maturity to everything. The foundations that 2025 brought through this maturity is reliable and dependable AI. It's becoming more and more a useful tool and less a bit of a mad companion that comes up with stuff that's useful but sometimes a little off the wall. Practical robotics is starting to emerge. Will it replace you as a human doing your job? Who knows, but there will be a level of replacement, the same way as AI has replaced certain functions in a work environment. But at the same time, you know, there's always something. If something's replaced, something's added on. So generally, I find that people need to be agile, train more, work more, and understand more. But these things, including quantum computers, will shape the next decade far more than any one of these wow moments that we've spoken about. In tandem, in cooperation, they're going to change everything even more in a way that you may or may not even notice. So the last word for this show is, and my hope for 2026, is that we keep technology serving people, not for technology's sake. It must give us more time to do the things we love. It must make us healthier, catch cancers. Just read an article that certain cancers have now been 100% cured through some research done in Tel Aviv and many other universities in Israel. So, and that is using technology. There's no question that genomic medicine and the amount of data that they needed has helped refine and replace the processes and the technologies of today with new ones that are better. So let's hope that we make wiser decisions and we live in better health for the next couple of years. And that's me for this show of Tech Talk right here on Chai FM. Same time, same place, every Thursday. Apparently, I'm moving to Friday shortly, so stay tuned. But anyway, have a great year end and a happy start to the new year. Till we next meet, Stephen Ambrose on Tech Talk.